Hello and welcome to another episode of the Three Bid League podcast. I am Tyler, joined always by Matt. And today we got an exciting episode to start off the preseason of the Three Bid League podcast. We're joined by our good friend Stu Ledecky and by Tristan Freeman of Busting Brackets. We're going to go over our top 21 players in the A-10 for this year. Everybody buckle up. This is going to be a fun marathon of a pod. Tristan and Stu, thank you both for joining us.
Hell yeah, man. Good to be back. Glad we got to.
Thanks for having us.
So we did this last year, about a year and a half ago, way earlier in the offseason with Stu. If anyone possibly remembers that pod, we're going to keep the format basically the same. We'll go over our number one player. We'll let the debate start to rage as we work our way all the way to 20. So you guys are our guests. Tristan, you've only been on with us once here, so I think it's only right to let you start the festivities at number one.
Oh, well, no pressure. I thought that I was going to make it more difficult than it was. I just don't think that there's anyone else you can go to outside of Osun Oshuni. Arguably one of the best big men in college basketball, reigning defensive player of the year for the A-10, a near double-double contributor, someone who I think is offense we could see even more of, but his impact on the court both ways was the primary reason why St. Bonaventure won the A-10 last year, and it's just hard to see somebody having that same kind of impact on all the players in the A-10. It's just hard to go against them, even though there are guys who are going to score more, but I don't think there's going to be anyone who is going to affect the win-loss column the way he is. He had to be number one for me.
I'll jump right back in then because I had him at number one, and I did not expect that anyone else would. You covered the bases about as well as I could have, but for me, the simple fact of the matter is he is the best player on the best unit in the conference, which is St. Bonaventure's defense. And this season, given that they will probably actually play their bench guys and not have their best guards on the court all the time, I think we're going to see a jump in his offense too. He's a really good post-up player, and nobody really realizes that. I expect to see a 3 to 4 points per game bump up from him in addition to his usual good rebounding and his excellent, excellent defense.
I'm glad we got some conflict early. I was afraid our top five, or at least like top three, were going to be pretty much exactly the same, but I got Javonte Perkins from SLU at number one. Last year, 17 points per game, shooting splits 46, 38, 87, and 3.9 rebounds per game. And now no Goodwin, no French. It's just going to be him being the man. So I think just the stars are aligned this year for him to go crazy. I don't know how many per game he's going to average, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him up there around 21 or 22. And like you're saying with Oshun being one of the best players or the best player on the best team, I think I have high hopes for SLU as a unit. So I wanted to give it to somebody along that vein on a great team, and I think SLU will be a great team. So Perkins for me.
All right, and then I'm happy to have another difference from you guys. I actually went with Jacob Gilliard, the Richmond point guard, for my number one pick. And this was pretty tough. I think there's about three or four good options here. To me, I see Gilliard. So last year, Richmond obviously had their struggles. That's well documented. They didn't live up to expectations, although there were some outside reasons for that. They just dealt with a lot of difficult situations. But offense wasn't really the problem for the Spiders at all. And I think Gilliard still did a great job as their point guard. We know he'll do it again. And what I really looked at, if you go back to his sophomore season, before they had Blake Francis and when Nick Sherrod was out pretty early on in that year, he actually probably had his best offensive year where he averaged over 16 points a game. He kept up a really high efficiency rating despite having much higher usage than he's had the prior 2 years. I kind of think without Francis, we're going to see him get back to those high scoring levels. And we don't really need to talk about his defense. That's just amazing. And he was second in the NCAA in steal rate last year. He's obviously going to shatter the all-time steals record this season pretty early on. So I just think when you combine his high levels of offense and defense, I'm going with him as my number one pick.
I don't want to be negative about Jacob Gilliard, who I have coming up very, very soon. But to me, and I guess I'll spoil it, I didn't even have him as Richmond's number one player. I just don't think he's the most important guy to that offense. And while he is an incredible defender, it's just tough for a point guard to have the dominant impact that you see like a Shunahi have, because Gilliard can be amazing, but if Richmond's interior D is bad, then their defense is still going to be bad. So yeah, I can't get myself to be fired up about this being wrong, but I do certainly have to disagree with it.
Yeah, and that's fair. I do think part of it, I would agree with you. I don't think Gilliard is the best offensive player on Richmond, and maybe not the most important either. But, you know, I think we obviously know who we're talking about. I don't think Grant Golden is a bad defender at all. I think he unfairly gets that reputation sometimes, but he's just clearly not the elite talent on both ends of the court, at least in my eyes. He's a good defender, but I think Gilliard, just what he's able to do on both sides of the ball makes him a little bit more valuable to me.
I think the concern with Judge and Richmond's players is that their best guy on the team is gone, Blake Francis. He was the one that turned the original core around into an actual top contender at the A-10. So if him out the way, do the rest of the players go back to what they were in the first 2 years, which was under 500 struggling? I actually have the same feeling that Gilliard wasn't my number one guy. It was someone else. But I think Gilliard can certainly make a play for one of the top point guards in the league. And he, without Francis, it's going to be all on him now when it comes to leading the offense.
All right. I like it. Some early controversy, some early discussion. That's exactly what we wanted. So with that, Tristan, do you want to kick it off with your second pick on your top 21 list?
Yeah, I was close to actually agreeing with Stu when it comes to who are number one. I had Javonte Perkins as number two. I completely agree without French and Goodwin now. He's going to be the primary scorer. I think there's a really good chance he can lead the A-10 scorer next season. He went from coming off the bench to being a starter. You could tell that he was more than willing to be the go-to guy on offense. Had a 32-point performance against LSU, which – would have been their biggest win of the season had they became a bubble team, but he's just as consistent as it comes. So give you at least 10, 12 points each night, can go for 30 if need be, just a scorer with few weaknesses in his game. And I think if St. Louis can be in the top one or two range, I would not be surprised if he's the A-10 player of the year.
All right, I'll set it off with my number two. I got I went the Bonner route, like you guys did with number one, but I went Kyle Lofton at number two. 14 points a game, 5.5 assists, 3.5 rebounds. Normally a pretty good three-point shooter. Took kind of a dip last year, but I think he'll get back to what he was in his first couple seasons. As far as picking him and not Oshun as the best player on the Bonnies, I just think of, like, who's the quarterback of the team, who's the floor general, who's the person that's going to have the ball in their hands late, and who should Bonnie's fans feel great about having their ball and the ball in his hands late? And that's Kyle Lofton for me. I think he's, when I think of the Bonnies, he's the first person I think of, so I had to go with him at number two.
Yeah, I went just like with Tristan again, Javonte Perkins. And I would venture to say that he is absolutely the favorite to be A-10 player of the year this season. He's definitely the best scorer in the conference. The rest of his offensive game is more than complete enough to turn him into a good team player, although I expect him to take a ton of shots this year and probably score upwards of 20 points a game. He's excellent. If they make it into the NCAA tournament, it will be on the back of Javonte Perkins. And I couldn't possibly justify putting him any lower than probably third. He's the highest floor guy in the conference this year. I'm putting him at two.
All right, so that's going to make me the lowest on Javonte Perkins because he is not my number two, but to anyone that's listened to this podcast, that shouldn't be a surprise, given that I'm a noted St. Louis hater. Not
yeah,
just kidding.
You don't have
that.
Any players on the list at all.
None at all. Couldn't do it. But so I did. I'm not going to say too much since we've already talked about him, but I went with Oshuni at number two. Really, the only point I want to bring up, like offensively, his stats honestly didn't change a whole heck of a lot from his sophomore year. He got a little bit better from the free throw line, and I think that's one potential area where he could improve. Like, he's got a nice shooting stroke, so if he actually developed some range, that could suddenly – that would make him the best player in the conference, I think. But really the key, he was just able to be on the court way more than the prior year. He played about 85% of minutes compared to under 60% his sophomore year, just because he missed about 7 games with injury. So I do think he's the most important player for St. Bonaventure. And, Stu, I had the same, like, battle in my head of figuring out which – Bonnie's player I wanted to put ahead, because they are both super important, but
yeah,
overall I just had to go with Oshun because of his defense there.
It's hard to tell who matters more as far as like the win-loss column, because yep, interior defense is so big for them, but also it's like, what would they look like as far as primary ball handlers without Lofton, you know? So, but I'm just gonna get it out of the way, I had Oshun at three. So I was wondering if we would have like the top three in some variation, like pretty much the same. And it was for all the reason you guys said, best defender in the league, 1A or 1B on the best team in the league. And yeah, you guys already covered it. So Oshun.
All right. So then we might as well just go into 3 through 5. Stu, you want to give us your 4 and 5?
Yeah. My 4 was Grant Golden. He's just turned 65 years old, so I'm curious to see how his knees will hold up this season. But like you guys said, just maybe the most versatile big man in the league, especially without much to my chagrin, without Trey Mitchell on UMass this year. But, yeah, can step out and shoot it. Great, great passer for a big man. I'm going to agree with what you were saying, Matt. Not great on defense, but serviceable on defense enough to keep him here at the top of this list. And, yeah, Richmond's going to be good, so he's going to look good. And then at number 5, I had Gilliard. Also, as you guys were saying, one of the best two-way players in the league. I didn't know he was going to break the Richmond steals record. Or is it the college basketball?
Yep. He's going to break the NCAA steals record probably in January.
Okay.
Maybe December.
That says it all right there. More than serviceable on the offensive end. Can shoot from 3. Can get to the foul line. Yeah, that's my top 5. I'm curious to see if there's any difference as far as that 5 not being the top 5. So.
Yeah, I guess I'll jump in then. To me, this is – the point of no controversy, where unless you want to slip in some crazy breakout guy and really go out on a limb, it's these 5 in some order. I have Lofton at 3, Golden at 4, and then Gilliard at 5. I already explained the Golden versus Gilliard thing. I think you got to get really bold to put someone in above these guys, and I really hope one of you two did.
Were any right. Guys, I'll let you say it. I was going to ask if any of you guys were thinking about it, but I'll let you say it first.
No, so I'll just jump into to continue the trend. And this is where I think I messaged you guys beforehand. I thought the top 5 was pretty easy, and it gets very difficult after this. So I did have the same top 5, although a little different order. So I also had Lofton 3 and Golden 4. I went with Perkins 5, which now I'm starting to have some doubts since you all had him in your top 2. To me, what I looked at when making this list, and I also want to say, I think all 5 of these players are very close. I think you could make a case for any of them being number 1, to be honest. But I feel like Perkins, he's the best scoring player in the conference. I don't really think there's any doubt about that. But when I look at him as a defender or a rebounder or a passer, he's just not quite as well-rounded of a player. He's not, I don't know, he doesn't really fill up other areas of the stat sheet to me. And where you look at Lofton, ended up being a really good shooter by the end of the season. He's obviously a good defender since everyone is on St. Bonaventure. And like you said, Stu, he's the quarterback of that team. And then Golden, just his combination of passing and scoring is pretty much unmatched for other centers. So I just saw them as being a little bit better all-around players, which was kind of the tiebreaker for me, but it was very close. So I do agree, though, Tyler, with what you said about how, unless you want to get really bold, these five are the best players in the conference to me.
Well, Kristen, did you get really bold?
Oh, boy. Well, we'll start with the easy ones. I had Kyle Lofton at three. I think you can make an argument that he could average around 7-8 assists a game for St. Bonaventure if it wasn't for the fact that several guys in the lineup can create their own offense. So the numbers Lofton has already is impressive. With Stu, I got Grant Golden at four. Such a versatile big man for Richmond, an outstanding scorer, facilitator as well. Really good guy. I had Jacob Dillard at six. So someone did break into the top five. And you know, they say you can get bold with breakout guys. And the guy who I think is going to take a massive leap is going to be Mustafa Amzil of Dayton. I think he's going to be a national star this upcoming season. Had 22 points in his first game, late, didn't even join the team till midway through, came from overseas. Such a crazy year, and he had such a great start. Had, I guess you can call it a freshman wall, but in reality, it was just so much going on. Such an outstanding post player, can score from anywhere. I don't want to put the Obi Toppin label on him when it comes to taking that massive, massive leap. But I think NBA scouts already have their eyes on him. I would not be surprised if he's an 18-7 kind of guy this upcoming season.
Love that. That's why we do these pods. Keep them coming.
I see Amzil as the single most unpredictable player in the entire league this year, because he already has the awesome offensive skill package. But at the same time, I personally think that he was a borderline atrocity on defense down the stretch. Teams started going after him. And part of that might be the whole he had only been on a college campus for 2 months thing. But if he does not clean that up, then he better be transcendent on offense, because they got a lot of forwards this year. And I could see him being a star. I could also see him just becoming like an 11-minute-a-game guy if the other guys around him end up playing really well. So that is outrageously bold.
I love it. That's for sure. How about that? We have two Dayton fans on this podcast, and somebody else picks Amzil the highest, which I definitely think there's a chance. I just think the fact that he only got half a season last year, he had no off season to work with the team. I mean, we've talked about that so much, how he just signed his scholarship and was out there on the practice court the next day and playing against LaSalle that Saturday, pretty much. So the fact that he was able to put up good numbers and make the all-rookie team was so impressive. And I definitely think there's a chance for a huge breakout. But how about Grant Golden, the consensus number four player in the conference? Didn't really think we'd get that with anybody this year, but congratulations to him.
What an honor.
That feels like the perfect Grant Golden average excellence. And I before we move on from this, I will say, if he had been healthy, I think I was going to talk myself into Ace Baldwin in the top five just to mix it up.
Wow.
But as I'll discuss when he comes up on my list, like, I just don't think we're going to see him at 100% for more than maybe a month this year with the way people are talking about that injury. So.
All right. You guys want to get into where we're definitely going to have some real differences?
Yep. Let's go to 6-10, because there's some, I expect at least three wild cards here.
You want to set it off, Tyler? I feel like you haven't led.
All right, I'll take it here. This year, I should have mentioned at the top, this year we included freshmen and transfers since we've actually had a few months to research them. So at six, I'm taking incoming George Mason transfer Deshaun Schwartz. Jaron Holmes at seven. He was a borderline first team all conference guy. Ace Baldwin at eight, which is probably ridiculous because he won't play enough to even make all conference, but I want it to properly reflect how good I think he is. Tyler Burton at 9. The breakout season is coming. I'm on board with John Rothstein on that. And then I don't know if this is too high or too low compared to everybody else, but Jordan Hall at 10.
Okay.
All right, I'll go next. I'm so disappointed with your Jordan Hall pick because I was just about to say that I have none of those guys in my top 10, but unfortunately I do have Jordan Hall at 10. I'll go with my 6 through 10 range though, and these first couple, I felt like they were really bold, but I honestly didn't have a good idea. Like I said, I felt like after the top 5, you could go a whole lot of different ways. Number 6, I'm going with the number one breakout player in the conference, future NBA player Hassan Ward from VCU. I feel pretty stupid picking someone that scored 6.5 points a game here, but just hear me out. He's about to block a ton of shots. Hyungjoon Lee at number 7, who I was very high on last year and ended up working out pretty well. Just an amazing offensive player. Tumani Kamara, my first transfer, going from Georgia to Dayton at 8. Jalen Attaway at number 9. So I went with a different Bonnie here. And then I had Jordan Hall at 10.
The forgotten Bonnie.
It could be. We'll see where you guys have him.
every guy you mentioned is between 11 and 15 on my list. Between 10 and 15. So
that gives me a little more self-assurance then. Okay. All right, Stu, you want to go next?
My number 6 is a guy who's improved a lot from year 1 to 2, and under new coach Kim English, I think is going to take another massive leap. Speaking of versatile big men, I'm going to go with Josh Oduro. Number 7, I have Jordan Hall. Just as far as the void that Ryan Daly left, I'm sure you guys had him up there on your list for similar reasons. He already had an explosive freshman year as is, but now he's especially ready to take that leap. Number 8, I have Marcus Sahonis. VCU point guard transfer from Washington, average double figures in the Pac-12. As far as voids go, talking about Ryan Daly, the one left by Bones Highland might be even bigger. So he's going to have a chance to make a huge impact. 9, I have Deshaun Schwartz going back to George Mason. And then number 10 is where I have Tyler Burton from Richmond. So a lot of the same guys, but a couple wild cards. Tristan?
Well, like I said before, 6, I had Jacob Gilliard. 7, I'm surprised compared between some of the national talk and what I hear from you guys. I had Hyungjoon Lee from Davidson at 7. I think – I'm not sure if he was a good fit with Kellen Grady. I think now that he's by himself on the wing that he has a chance to really explode, I like him a lot. 8, I got surprised he wasn't here. I think he has a really good chance to be the top transfer in the A-10, and Tamari Kamara from Georgia. I think him and Amzel's going to be a very, very good front court duo in the A-10. My concern with Dayton is with their backcourt, not their front court. I think those two will be fantastic. He was a double-digit contributor for a really bad team, and despite being the clear offensive option for Georgia, he was still able to produce well. So I think he'll be just fine at Dayton. Number 9, I got Jordan Hall. I think he warrants a spot in the top 10. And maybe I'm not sure if I'm too high on him, but I think we're sleeping on George Washington a bit. And I think their best player, James Bishop, is going to be someone that's going to put up a ton of stats. Quite frankly, they don't really have many others that can produce for the Colonial. So I would not be surprised if James Bishop, just from an offensive standpoint, finds his way on the second or first team list.
I think that all comes down to how good GW is, and that's like a huge question mark right now. I feel like they're one of the teams that, like, as far as predictability, they have like the widest range of possible finishes, or one of the widest ranges of it. Any team in the league.
Yeah, I was very curious on James Bishop. I have him coming up a little bit later, but I feel like he's been one of the most controversial players in the A-10, kind of like Fats a couple years ago, just because when you see a player taking as many shots as he does on what ended up being a really bad year last year, It can be a little bit controversial when you see him, like, is he really helping his team that much? But I agree, Tristan. I think he's going to put up some huge stats. He had the highest usage rate in the conference last year, and he was still pretty efficient. Not the best three-point shooter, but he gets to the rim a ton. He draws a lot of fouls. And if Javonte Perkins didn't take his COVID year, I think Bishop would be the favorite to lead the conference in scoring. So I thought that was a good pick. I think he's going to have a big year.
He got a bad rap because of, like, the viral Twitter videos of his air balls at the buzzer. But he didn't deserve half of that stuff. He's a great player.
All right, let's do it then. Thank you for saying it, Matt. He's not as good as Fats Russell. This is young Fats Russell again. Like, I get
it. Do you remember what happened Fats Jr. year, though?
Well, I get the GW's roster's not that good. But my God, James Bishop didn't make anyone on that team better last year. Like, it became really clear early in the year that they were not going to win games where Battle did not get a decent dose of shots. And he just got ignored in the corner for months. That's why he's at Minnesota now. I'm out on Bishop until I see him actually, like, make plays to contribute to winning.
I think he's going to get more help this year. We have to remember Battle was hurt for a good chunk of the year. Jameer Nelson left the team halfway through. So it was tough for GW. I think with Bishop, you know, GW's bringing in a couple Power 5 transfers. They have a 4-star freshman power forward coming in. I think having a little bit more talent around him, or hopefully he has more talent around him, I think that's going to help. But I you could be right on that. We'll see.
All right. Stu, I need you to defend Josh Oduro real quick, because I think I spent more thought time on him than anyone else in the conversation of this list. His game log is really weird from last year. Yeah. I think we all remember the 27-point game. He showed some awesome flashes, but I'm not sure he's going to be able to put it together consistently at all. And I actually wonder if he can do it without good guard play, which George Mason might not have good guard play this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a question mark. And he had kind of a weird game log, but George Mason also was kind of a weird team that couldn't really find their style. And I feel like that's why, or at least partially why, it's kind of overdue why Kim English is in. But as far as defending him, just the improvement from year one to year two, his raw tools. Like, if you just watch his footwork in the post, I think, like, he has what it takes to be an absolute beast in this league. I just think he hasn't quite put it all together yet. But last year, 10 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, efficient scoring, 50% from the field. And now they're going to rely on him because he's kind of – I mean, Deshaun Schwartz is another guy too, but no Javon Green, no Jordan Miller. He's kind of like the guy. And I think it's just – it's apparent from the way Kim talks about him that he is high on him and that he's going to rely on him a lot. So that's where I was going with that. And maybe I'm also higher on George Mason than some other people are, because I know they're kind of a wild card team that could finish like 11 and could finish 4. I don't really have them either of those places, but I think I have them on the higher end, maybe around 6 or so. So I think Oduro is going to be I'll give him second team all conference when it's all said and done.
All right. If nobody's going to ask me about it.
I wanted to ask,
am I the only one with Jaren Holmes in the top 10? What the hell is this?
First, I wanted to ask you about Ace. Can you talk to me about that one?
Yeah, I was actually curious about that one too. That's a good.
If he's healthy, he's a lock. He would have been a lock for all defensive team. It actually would have sucked for the other guards, because we could have just voted for him and Gilliard right now and just not watched the season, because we know that's where it would have been headed anyway. I think he's the best guard passer in the league. He's about to be, because by the time he comes back, Kyle Lofton will be gone. But he's going to be the best guard passer in the league. The scoring still leaves a lot to be desired, and he really struggled trying to take over the number one role those 2 games Bones was hurt, but I think he's going to grow into it. He's your perfect long-term point guard that is just going to be torturing teams for the remainder of his college career. The defense is so outrageous that you got to put him high.
How do you see the split between him and Sahonis working, or the chemistry? Do you see them on the floor together or switching off?
So I found it really hard to get a grip on Sahonis, where I've read a lot of stuff about people watch the Pac-12 being super down on him. And it seems to me like when Ace gets healthy, he's absolutely the starting point guard. And I think right now most people would say Sahonis is starting next to him. But if Jaden Nunn is as good as they're hyping him up to be, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Sahonis is just the microwave sixth man.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would say Sahonis had one of the most interesting game logs that I looked at of the incoming transfers this year. So he had 5 games above 20 points, including games with 29 and 27. He also had about 10 games in single digits and a lot of games early in the season where he barely played at all. So I just got the vibe that he was a very inconsistent player, but I feel like moving to the A-10 on a team that's going to need a volume scorer without Bones Highland there, I think he's got a lot of potential to do that. He could be the missing piece for VCU because they are going to need somebody to score, and we don't really know who that's going to be yet. So I did think that was an interesting pick.
Watkins could have been that guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see Sahonis just kind of lead the team through the non-conference. And once we get to January and Ace is back and Nunn has just really grown into the game, if he does take a step back, where we're looking at his conference non-con splits at the end of the year, and he's gone from incredible non-con numbers to weaker conference numbers just because the minutes per game are just going to drop.
All right, so one thing I thought was really interesting in this grouping, Tristan, you and I actually had the same 7 and 8 picks, Hyungjoon Lee and Tumani Kamara. First, I wanted to ask you about Kamara, because this is something as a Dayton fan I've been thinking about this offseason. How do you think that front court dynamic is going to work between him and Amzil? Because it seems like they both have the potential to score a lot of points, but do you think those are – I mean, obviously you have them both high on your list. Do you think they can play well together on the court?
Yeah, I mean, as long as Amzil can – potentially spread the floor, that's not really Kamara's ideal. Both of them are really good individual offensive players. It's hard to judge Kamara's defense, considering the fact that no one in Georgia could play defense whatsoever. But the size and skills, and I think it's going to work perfectly. I'm more interested in what they're going to do with Daron Holmes, who's a 6'8" freshman forward. He can be a combo, but I don't think he's a wing. So it's hard. He's not going to play over Kamara, because that's just going to be a recruiting issue going forward if you bring in a top-level transfer and then have him on the bench. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a three-man rotation between those three. They can all play within each other. That's why I'm big on Amzil's breakout campaign, because if he can spread the floor, shoot well, that opens things up for Kamara. And It'll come down to Dayton's guards. Now the Crutcher is not there. Can Elijah Weaver be that guy? I don't know if I saw enough from him last year, but there's no question about the front court. It's all for Dayton. If they're going to be a top three contender, like some of the fans think they can be, what the guards do instead of front court. I have very little issues about the front court. I think after this year, once a SUNY and the Richmond guys leave, Dayton's front court is going to be the clear-cut best for the 2022-23 campaign.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree. That's got to be the strength of the team, really. It's going to come down to, can Elijah Weaver or maybe one of the freshman guards get these guys the ball? But what I'm just really excited about with Kamara, seems like he's, you know, a more athletic, more skilled big man than what they had with Jordy Chimanga last year. I think that's, in the long term, the style that Anthony Grant wants to play, having a center that can spread the floor a little bit, even though Kamara is not a good 3-point shooter. He was like 26% last year, but he at least makes defenses keep him honest. And I think he's going to be a really exciting player for the Flyers this year. Put up some good numbers in the SEC. Like you said, with his defense, since Georgia was such a bad defensive team, I don't know how much stock he can take into that, but I think he should be one of the top transfers this year.
Nobody else has any bones to pick in the top 10.
Well, I mean, I had Hassan Ward 6, and I don't think anybody had him. So should I defend that real quick?
Yeah,
he was coming up for me.
Yeah, I have him coming later, but like, as optimistic as I am for him offensively, he's gonna make a huge leap to get up to 6. I had forgotten you even said that by this point. I'm all right, still well, reeling this about James Bishop at 10.
I knew you weren't going to like that one. Well, I'll just make this quick. I mean, basically, I think the key with Ward, I think it's going to be kind of similar to what we saw with Oshun going from his sophomore to junior year. Just getting more minutes really helped his team out. And I hope Hassan Ward gets more of a chance this year. He only played about 24 minutes a game during conference season. I think he's got to be on the court pretty much at all times. He's actually ahead of Oshun in block rate, by the way. So, you know, you give him 30, 32 minutes a game, I think he'd be right up there at the end of the season. Also, just a really efficient player. Kind of like Oshun, not very high usage, but top 10 in the conference and 2-point field goal percentage. He's a good free throw shooter, too. So, I don't know. He definitely does need to do a little bit more on the offensive end, but defensively, I think there's a strong case that he's the second best center in the conference on that end.
Ward is one of those guys where you almost like whatever improvement he makes from a given year to the next, you almost have to magnify it because he started playing basketball so recently in his life too, like picked it up during high school.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's already doing what he is, like 3 blocks per game, like it's easy to envision him as like, whoa, where did he come from? You know, like all of a sudden. And yeah, that could be this year.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the harder players to rank in the entire conference, just because if you do pick him this high, you're betting on his potential, which I am. But I don't know. I think he's going to be very important to VCU this year. And he's just so fun to watch too. Going up for alley-oops, swatting shots into the bleachers.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love that? So. Going with him at 6.
I just need to see him be able to do something on offense besides just set a pick and dunk.
Yeah, he's also – we're going to have to see. 10.
But, he's borderline useless on offense, but he's such a good shot blocker that he is still on my list. So
see, that is one thing I didn't consider. Bones was amazing at throwing him out of oops. So we're going to have to see if one of VCU's other cards can do that, because that is about half of his scoring. But somebody's going to figure it out. It can't be that hard to get him the ball. He can go up and get it.
As Tyler said, Ace is a great passer, so maybe he'll figure out the lob, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
I'll throw into mine real quick then before we move on. Jaron Holmes was one of the 7 or 8 best players in the conference last year. His scoring is massively critical for Lofton to be the playmaker that he is and not have to worry about scoring himself. He has to be top 10. This is insane. I'm looking through this list. No one even called him Jaron English by mistake. I don't know how I don't see him anywhere else. And then Tyler Burton, since I was the highest on him. You mentioned earlier that Gilliard will take over the Francis scoring. I think Burton does. I think Burton leads them in scoring this year. And I think that he actually plays the Francis role better than Francis did. And he's going to be the big if Richmond does indeed finish top 2 this year, it's because Burton's awesome.
Yeah.
Are we sure he's the third best Bonnie on the team? I'm not personally sure about that.
I love Jalen Attaway, but I'd do an entire pod dedicated to how much I love watching Jalen Attaway. But without Holmes' scoring, that offense just flat out doesn't work.
Yeah, although I would add, so I had Attaway the highest. I think I was the only one to have him in the top 10. And I think if you look at his season total stats, they're a little bit underwhelming. I mean, still 12.6 rebounds, so very good. But if you look at his non-conference, it wasn't really stellar. By the end of the year, he started taking and making threes. His scoring went up to 14.3 points a game in the last 10. And I just kind of saw him. I mean, you look at St. Bonaventure from 2020 and 2021, I just feel like maybe he was the missing piece because he had to sit out the 2020 season when St. Bonaventure was okay, but they weren't a conference contender by any means. And I don't know. He's just that glue guy. I don't know if it always shows up in the stats for him, but I feel like if he can build on his strong finish to last season, that's what made him the next highest ranked Bonnie for me.
To me, Attaway's the glue that makes them special, but Holmes is what takes them from being good to like a legitimate tournament lock.
When you mentioned that, like, his stats weren't stellar and that's kind of what keeps him off, like, say, like top five, top six range or whatever, like, that kind of emphasizes like the point of how hard it is to make these lists. Cause it's like, yeah, it was 12-6, but what would it have been if he was on Fordham or GW or LaSalle? Like, would he have looked like a James Bishop? Obviously a different play style, but you know what I mean? As far as like filling it up. So that's one thing I kind of wrestled with making this list is like, how much do I want to go with like their pure numbers, and how much do I want to go with like, okay, there's just like a room full of every player that we're talking about and I can draft them in order to be on like my basketball team. Who do I want? Like, even if their numbers aren't that great because they were on a loaded team, like, and I ended up kind of going like right down the middle, an amalgam of those two things. And maybe you guys did, or maybe you guys went more one way or the other, but yeah, it's kind of an interesting exercise, you know?
All right. I guess I've gotten all my grievances out of the way. Are we ready to move on to the 11 through 15 range?
You take it, Matt.
All right. I'll start us off real quick. Number 11, I have not the king of the triple nickel, but one of the best, Noah Fernandes.
Let's go.
Tyler Burton at 12, Mustafa Amzil at 13, Deshaun Schwartz at 14, and then I had James Bishop 15.
All right. I'll take it. My 11, I had Jaren Holmes. Sorry to keep you waiting, Tyler, but glad I got him out as soon as possible after the top 10. 12, I wanted to do a bit of a spicy take in there, so I have Jameer Bricus. I think he takes a huge leap. He's just one of those guys that plays with, like, a certain swag and flair to his game that, like, he just exudes confidence, and he got better as the year went on. He finished the year strong. Over his last six, I was looking at his game log, averaged 13-3. And it just seems like his confidence grew to the point where he's ready to be the guy. And he's just fun to watch, and he has a great name. So I had to put him in there in my top 15. Tumani Kamara, I have at 13 for all the reasons you guys mentioned. 14, I have Noah Fernandes. I think without Trey, it's hard to say it's going to be his team because UMass isn't really top heavy, but they're deep. So, but I do think he is, if you had to pick one, the best player. So I think he's going to shine. And then at 15, I have Hyunjun Lee.
Tristan?
Yeah, so I had Tyler Burton at 11. I thought he was highly impressive when Nick Sherratt went down. We wanted to see who was going to step up at the wing. And Burton was not only a double-digit scorer, but he gave them some toughness and rebounding that I didn't see. Really good player. 12, I had Hassan Ward. I think either way, he's going to be important for VCU because without Bones Highland, they're going to need people to score. So either Ward's going to be able to step up and give them more offensive production, or they're going to be a team that can't score, so they're going to need him on the court as much as possible for his interior defense. So either way, he's going to be really important for them. I think he's going to have a big impact, not to a level of an Osuni, but somewhere close that'll keep VCU competitive, whether or not they can score. 13, I had Yuri Collins. I really liked him at St. Louis, despite the fact that they have so many guys that can create their own shots. His assist numbers was really impressive. I think he's a really good point guard that sort of flies under the radar a bit. I think him and Perkins are going to be a very good backcourt for St. Louis to have. 14, I had 14, I had Josh Maduro. I'm also with Stu. I'm big on him with George Mason. I think he's going to have a big year. I like what Kim English is doing. I think he's going to do well when it comes to developing him. I think he'll take the next level. He'll probably be a third-teamer, in my opinion, if George Mason can be competitive. And then 15, I had Noah Fernandez. Looking at the UMass backcourt, I was looking for TJ Weeks to be that guy that, of course, sort of stands out. But instead, it was Fernandez. Not surprising when he came over from Wichita State. Really good playmaker, good scorer, good facilitator. I think he's going to take that leap. And without Mitchell sort of being the clear-cut go-to guy, I won't be surprised if we see Fernandez and even Weeks, to a lesser extent, see their stats improve greatly.
All right.
I'm into the TJ taking a leap.
I got so much wild heat coming at 16 to 21. So a quick little palate cleanser of all guys who have been discussed. Tumani Kamara at 11. He's going to be the dirty work guy inside that Dayton so desperately needed last year. I don't think he'll even lead the team in scoring, but I think he'll be their best all-around player. Speaking of great all-around players, Jalen Adway at 12, the captain of my fun-to-watch team. Hyunjun Lee at 13. He's going to keep hitting threes at a good rate. He'll be the leading scorer for Davidson, but I just don't quite see the star turn for reasons that will be discussed way more in depth as we get deeper in the preseason. Noah Fernandes at 14. I can't believe we all had him top 15, but he's just an excellent, excellent all-around player. And if he can bump up the scoring a little bit and lead that UMass offense, he's going to have to be on the all-conference team. And then at 15, Hassan Ward, the most beautiful shot blocker in all of the land.
But the least beautiful in your eyes, offensive post presence in all of the land.
Yeah, he needs to develop like a 7-foot jump shot to make top 10.
Maybe bring the baby hook back.
If Hassan Ward can shoot a baby hook, then I'm already calling dibs on him for the fun to watch pod in February.
Yeah, he'd make first team. So is that everyone's through 15 at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got two I kind of want to bring up. Stu, you already talked about Brickus, so I'll pass along. Matt, since you're the only other one to bring him up so far, Deshaun Schwartz in the top 15. I want to hear what you're seeing with him.
Oh, yeah. I had Schwartz at 9, but.
Oh, yeah. There's too many words in front of me here.
That's okay. He's an important player, though. I think we can talk about him for a minute and maybe why I didn't have him in my top 10. Definitely, I think he's a top 20 player in this conference. I just think the fact that he spent 4 years playing at Colorado over a really good stretch for that program that culminated in the Buffs being the number 18 in KenPom at the end of last year, and he was one of their best players, so I think you put someone like that in the Atlantic 10, they're going to succeed. What stopped me from putting him even higher as a top 10 or even top 5 player, I just wonder if he's going to be able to be the guy for the Patriots. Because at Colorado, he had a lot of talented players, obviously McKinley Wright, who we Dayton fans know well. And at George Mason, I think, well, I guess maybe – not clearly, because you guys are all really high on Josh Oduro too, but I would say Schwartz is expected to be the best offensive player on that team, and he is going to give them the three-point shooting that they've desperately needed the last couple years that they didn't have under Dave Paulson. I'm just really interested to see, though, can he keep up the really high efficiency, since I'm expecting he will be taking more shots than he has previously in his career.
Stu, you want to jump in on that real quick?
On Schwartz?
Just... Yeah, well, because we probably should have done this already since two of us had him in the top 10. And some of our listeners probably don't even know who he is at this point.
As far as just guys who are going to fill it up on the offensive end, I don't know what he averaged at Colorado. I think it was like maybe 9 or
9.6.
Okay.
In his junior season.
But as Dayton fans well know, from that one fateful game, just one of those guys where his stroke is just like, as soon as it's up, it's like, well, that's going in. You know, you can just tell watching him that he's one of the more gifted players offensively and in the league. And I think Mason is going to really benefit from that.
Yeah. I mean, the man led to probably the most depressive train ride of my entire life that Saturday before Christmas, in the midst of Dayton's eventual co-national championship season. His shooting numbers are beautiful. 40% from three last year. They've taken a jump up each of the last 2 years. And I think the big question is what you guys have brought up. Can he be better as the guy? And he didn't have a huge sample size of double-digit shot games, but basically with the exception of a disastrous performance his junior year against Kansas, every time he took double-digit shots, he came through. When Colorado needed to lean on him to be a more important scorer for them, he came through. He had a lot of great games when the shooting attempts were high, and he kept his efficiency above 40% in all of those games. So against even lesser defense than you see in the Pac-12, although they're both mid-major leagues, so maybe it's about the same. But I expect him to be a star immediately. He's such an old, experienced player, too, that he should have no transition issue.
And as far as, like, what numbers he did put up, it has to be recognized that, like, it wasn't like a Sahonis situation where he's coming from a bad team. Like, he's coming from a team – he was putting up 9 points a game on a team that had McKinley Wright and Tyler Bay and Jabari Walker, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be very interesting to see what his numbers look like without – anyone like those guys. I mean, Oduro, but obviously no obvious stars, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Colorado was a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament last year, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we, we're going to finish strong right here? 16.
I got to throw one to Tristan real quick before we move on, because nobody else said his name, and I'm disappointed no one else has said it. So, Yuri Collins. He's a good player. He has not put up stats anywhere near the all-conference vicinity this year. So, Tristan, I'll ask you to kind of visualize here. If Yuri Collins makes third-team all-conference this season, what is the change that has to be made? What is he going to get better at going forward?
Well, first off, he's going to have to want to score the basketball. I think he relied – rightfully so, on the three-headed monster of Perkins, French, and Goodwin, but he didn't want to score at all. And then sometimes the defenses know that, and that can hurt. And that hurts St. Louis at times because the post defense were very aware that he didn't want to score. So he's going to have to be more than basically the college version of Rajon Rondo. He's going to have to be willing to shoot the ball, be willing to, besides facilitating, create his own offense. The roster for St. Louis outside of Perkins and Oakland transfer Rashad Williams doesn't have a lot of creators. So it's going to be up to Collins to not only create for others, but he's going to have to score himself on times. You can't rely on Perkins to go for 20 every night to keep you in the game. I think he played his role well. He's a very talented distributor. I'm looking for him to be a double-digit scorer, somewhere around 10 to 12 points a game, while keeping it around the 5 or 6 assist range. But he has the potential to do it, and I trust the coaching staff to put him in a position where he's going to statistically be a third teamer, I think.
Yeah, I think Yuri's going to be a really important player for St. Louis this year. I think losing two just transcendent players to their program, Goodwin and French, St. Louis is probably going to have to be a little more three-point oriented. And I think with Perkins, Rashad Williams, Gibson Jimerson, even Terrence Hargrove last year started shooting a lot of threes, you know, they're going to have to get open looks on the perimeter. And I think Yuri Collins, with the high assist rates he's had over his career at St. Louis, I feel like he could be the right guy. I'm just curious, though, because he hasn't really gotten those high scoring numbers yet, and he has been, I think, more effective as a passer than a scorer. But if he can reach that next level and start finishing more shots inside and even making some threes of his own, that could be a huge boost to St. Louis. But also, Tyler, so I'm curious now. When you asked that question, you were mentioning how Collins hasn't had the stats to put him in this all-conference discussion yet. I just feel like looking at their stats side by side, how different was Yuri Collins' first two seasons to what Ace Baldwin had last year? Because you had Ace really high in your rankings.
Well, the other big difference, too, is I just think Ace is a whole different stratosphere of defender.
All right, that's fair. And, I'd say Collins is good, but I think Baldwin's better, so that's
yeah,
fair.
I mean, I'm making far more of a predictive choice with Baldwin, as I would assume that Tristan is with Collins. For me, interestingly enough, because I love Collins as a passer, but he has basically shown us that I don't want to say that he doesn't want to score, but he certainly doesn't seek it out. And if you tell me that Collins is going to be an all-conference player this year, I would assume either one of two things happen. One, St. Louis is just awesome. They win the conference. They're an NCAA tournament lock. And we're looking at our ballots at the end of the year like, oh, well, of course we got to reward Yuri Collins. He's the point guard that puts together all this stuff for these great talents around him. Or two, the transfers just aren't that good. And Collins has to be a scorer. I think if they end up in like the 3-4-5 range and Williams is good or Nesbitt's good, I think Collins is probably just more of a facilitator. And we don't quite see the scoring that Tristan's predicting, but he was a guy that was tough for me. I left him off my list, but I had to think long and hard before I erased him.
Yeah, same. He was just off my list, but like, 22, I know we go down to 21, 22 through like 30, like 5 is a lot of good.
Yeah.
Guys. Yeah.
I had 33 on my watch list. So,
yeah.
All right, Stu, you want to bring us home on 16 to 21?
Yeah, sure. 16, I have the new Fats Russell, Ishmael El-Amin, Ball State point guard transfer. As far as raw talent, it's hard for me to say, you know, this guy is this exact number in the league. But as far as how Rhodey plays, or at least they played with Fats Russell, I think it'll be an easy transition into what I've seen from Ishmael El-Amin. At 17, I have Deron Holmes. I wanted to get one freshman in there, and this is a top 50 freshman in the country. And I know we've kind of talked about how Dayton needs a guy without Crutcher in the picture. I'm not saying Deron Holmes will be the guy from the jump, but I think he's definitely a candidate to kind of take over stardom there. Jalen Attaway is my 18. James Bishop at 19. Hassan Ward landed at 20 for me. And then at 21, I have Rich Kelly at UMass, BC transfer who averaged double figures. This one was kind of hard for me because, like, UMass's backcourt is deep. So, like, Javon Garcia, TJ Weeks, CJ Kelly from Albany are all going to get time. But I think if you look at McCall's play style, I think Rich Kelly is going to find himself on the floor after Noah Fernandes. I think he's going to find himself on the floor the most of anyone in that group. And from what I've seen of his game, I only caught a couple BC games and I didn't catch any Quinnipiac games when he was there, but I think he's going to complement Noah, especially really well, being a great 3-point shooter and a decent passer. So that's my top 21 for next year.
Tristan.
Yeah, so go back to the St. Bonaventure talk. I'm surprised I have not heard this. Number 16 for me is Dominic Welch. And you talked before about St. Bonaventure's ceiling. For me, they're great defensively. But when you saw them against LSU, if their defense isn't good enough to stop opponents, their offense can have concerns. And I think for them to reach their ceiling, they're going to have to be a more willing 3-point shooting team. Welch was their best shooter from last year, 39%, takes over 6 attempts a game. Shooting's not really Lofton's specialty. And while Holmes is very good, Attaway can do it. I think when VCU was at their best last year, it was when Welch was going for 15 to 20 a game. He was definitely inconsistent. There were definitely games where he pretty much disappeared. But he's a solid rebounder, a decent defender. I think his all-around game, along with his shooting ability, warrants a spot in the top 20. So he was my third best, Bonnie. But I did have to put the other two in as well. 17 was Marcus Tsonis. In his defense, it was just coaching malpractice what happened to Washington. Mike Hopkins had to start Eric Stevenson and Cole Badgema, who were transfers. So they basically got played. Those two were wildly inconsistent and quite frankly had no business getting the minutes they did. I think what they wanted to do was just have to show Tsonis beat a six man so they could have some level offense whenever Quade Green wasn't on the court. He can go, and I think he'll play the Javonte Perkins role when he arrived at St. Louis, where he'll just be an elite six man, can score 10 to 15 points each game. And with Ace Baldwin, I think he's going to have an even bigger role. I would have had Ace Baldwin in the list too, but him alongside Nick Sherrod coming back from injury, I just don't want to put injury questions on the list for now, but I wouldn't be surprised if either of them have a major impact. 18, I had Attaway. 19, I had Jaron Holmes. It was hard for me to not put all five Bonnies within the top 20. I think I personally have St. Bonaventure as the clear-cut favorite, and all five of them were great players, so they all warrant a list. 19, I had Deshaun Schwartz. I think without McKinley Wright, he's going to be an absolute star for George Mason. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a 15-point scorer. 20, I had – let me look for him. 20, I had Jameer Frickus. I think he's someone from LaSalle. Someone from LaSalle is going to put up a lot of points, put up a lot of stats. I would not be surprised if he's the guy that does it. And then for – I think – unless I double count, I think that was 20. And then 21, I was looking for someone that could be – I think – and maybe this was a bit of a cop-out, but I wouldn't be surprised if Nathan Kao of Richmond has a big of an impact for Richmond as well. They're my number two preseason team. I think he's a very good, consistent contributor. And I think with Grant Golden around, he sort of flies under the radar. But I would not be surprised if Nathan Kao has a big final year for Richmond, keeps them right at the top tier.
Yeah, he's rarely flashy, but he's always steady.
All right, I can go next with my final players, and I had a couple differences here, which is good. 16, I have Deron Holmes. Had to put a freshman. If you go back in the last 5 years or so, it's not uncommon for freshmen to make the all-conference team. We've had Grant Golden, Kellen Grady, Trey Mitchell, Obi Toppin. And if I'm picking one to maybe do that, why not bet on the borderline top or five-star recruit? 17, who no one's mentioned, and I don't really expect Tyler to either, but I think he might be the most underappreciated player in the conference. Luka Brajkovic for Davidson. I think without Kellen Grady, without Carter Collins, the offense is going to run through him a lot more. He's a decent passer. He started shooting threes at a higher rate last year, about 2.5 a game, and he was shooting them at the highest percentage of his career. So I think he's going to put up his best season. Vince Williams from VCU at 18, who just kind of set the league on fire with his three-point shooting last year. And I don't know if he's going to quite be able to match that again because it was pretty amazing. But he's also just a great defensive player too. Good all-around guy for the Rams. 19, Jaron Holmes. So the second best Holmes in the conference on my list. 20, I have Francis Okoro for St. Louis, who I'm pretty much just expecting to be Hassan French 2.0. Tremendous offensive rebounder, very physical player, absolutely cannot shoot free throws. So I really think there's a lot of comparisons there.
Maybe the most ripped player in the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he is going to fit right into what St. Louis has wanted to do. And then 21, this one was really tough. I initially had Marcus Tsonis penciled in because I do think he's going to be a missing piece for VCU, but I ended up going back and I didn't have anyone from Rhode Island on the list, and I do think that's kind of going to be a team that's better than the sum of their parts. But I did have to get someone, so I went with Antoine Walker, who this is also contingent on David Cox actually playing him a little bit more, because last year I just don't think he used him enough. But Walker's a great rebounder, great defender, and one of the most efficient inside scorers in the conference. So hoping he gets more playing time, because I think he has the chance to put up some nice stats this year.
So for mine, real quick, honorable mentions that I want to throw out. Jordan Nesbitt, who don't hate me, West Pine, for leaving him off. I just wonder if he might start slow this year. Oduro, Brickus, Sahonis, they all got mentioned. Francis Okoro, who I'm really high on but couldn't fit him in. Tyson Acuff, we haven't mentioned Duquesne at all.
Duquesne players, no Duquesne, no Fordham. Those are the only two teams.
Yeah, Acuff could have a huge breakout this year. And Welch, like you mentioned, but since no one else had Ace on their list, if I hadn't put him on, my last spot would have gone to Nick Sherrod, who is just going to provide great three-point shooting for an incredible offense. But for me, 16 to 21, Ricky Lindo at 16, the double-double machine. He helped GW's front court so much after years of basically watching them bleed points on defense and not be able to score on offense. Vince Williams at 17, just any team in this conference would be thrilled to have Vince Williams as their third best guy. Mm-hmm. He does all the little things that you want. He's not flashy. He's not going to help replace Bones' scoring, but he's going to get everything else done.
Yeah, and he's especially important with the Watkins news too.
Yeah, he's gonna need to come up huge. 18 and 19, the Dayton thing for me is weird because I don't know how they're going to distribute their front court minutes, and that's why I left Deron Holmes off my list. I just wonder if he won't play enough to get up there this year. At 18, I'm taking Zimi Nokeji. And then Amziel at 19. I actually left Amziel off the list originally, and Tristan talked me into putting him back on. I just keep forgetting that he's only practiced with the college team for like 3 months in his life. And as he starts to develop, should get better on defense. 20, Taylor Funk. He sucks on defense, but he almost made all conference last year.
Had like 18 points a game or something crazy.
He's going to score like a maniac and get a ton of rebounds.
He had 18 points a game, but St. Joe's had like 132 points a game. So you got to balance that out there.
It's true.
And at 21.
Gave up 140, that's why. They were bad.
he spent all year just doing everything he could to not make the list. But he has to be on there because I haven't sold my stock yet.
Yeah, he's rock steady too. Was Zimi the one who like was pretty solid and then like one game he had like 34 or something like that? He just went crazy?
Yeah, in the double overtime game against Rhodey.
Yeah. All right. What's the rationale on him?
So he spent the first month and a half of the season basically looking like he was on a different court than everybody else. The speed of the game was too much for him early on, and he was really, really tentative to shoot even when he was wide open. And in February, something kind of just clicked with him that he finally started playing aggressively. He started actually being willing to shoot the three ball and came in at about 31%. But the biggest thing is he's going to be a menace at the rim. And he couldn't do it last year because Shimango was just dominating the paint and the senior guards had the ball in their hands all the time. I think Nokeji is going to be a big scorer this year. He should be above average on defense too. Depending on the position, because I have no idea what spot he'll actually play.
Mm-hmm. Tyler, I don't think – who was your 21st pick? I think I might have missed that one.
Of course it's TJ Weeks.
All right.
I don't care that he was absolutely awful last year.
So
he was also coming back from like a sports hernia, or they kept him out of basketball for like 5 months or something like that.
He missed – so many wide open corner threes where the shot looked good and it just like clanged off the inside of the rim.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ever had so much bad luck for a player in 1 year.
Yeah, you kind of have to, like, meet in the middle of the two seasons he had, because he shot, like, 47% from three as a freshman, and that wasn't going to hold up, but he's also better than 32 or whatever. Like, now that he's had a full offseason of practice, I feel comfortable that he'll be, like, right around 40 from three, you know?
He's another guy where, like, with Amziel didn't have an offseason at all anyway, but I feel like the COVID offseason probably killed Weeks because he was trying to rehab the whole time.
Yeah.
And he just, like, his athleticism just didn't quite look the same as his freshman year. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if Matt McCall just said this week that he was never even close to 100% healthy last year.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be.
Stu, yeah. You had Rich Kelly at 21. Yeah. You already kind of explained it, but Tristan, you are, it's certainly for this pod, the resident ACC expert, but even on your site, you take that spot too. So can you give us a little Rich Kelly breakdown?
Yeah, I mean, solid. I think there's nothing too flashy about him. He's a guy that can probably give you 10 points a game, really good shooter, smart player. He's just not going to change the world. And I think UMass was hoping that he could do something like that after they lost so many players previously. But at the A-10 level, I would not be surprised if he's a solid contributor. My only concern is him, Fernandez, and Weeks, how strong a defensive backcourt is that going to be. There's a lot of good guards in the A-10. Do you really want Weeks playing the three spot, or is this going to be a scenario where the three of them just rotate in and out of the backcourt and you have someone else bigger that can play the three?
You have to have, like, one of Javon Garcia or CJ Kelly in there for their size and defensive ability. Well, I'm not saying CJ Kelly is a lockdown defender, but at least more able to defend somebody who's 6'5", like you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting for UMass overall, because are they just going to go small to replace Trey Mitchell, or are they just going to have an all-hand to just play their five best players regardless of size and position to replace that, or are they going to try and have a traditional lineup and just have a fairly deep bench to sort of contest what the lineups for Richmond and, say, Bonaventure and the others are going to have. Because just UMass isn't going to have as good a lineup, but maybe they can have the edge on the bench and work out some lineups that way.
I think that's the plan, yeah. Just, like, have an unpredictable starting five, but just whatever the matchup is. If the other team's small, okay, let's have all of, like, let's lead minutes with Javon, TJ, Noah, Rich. Like, let's get them all out there, you know. If they're big, let's maybe one of Noah or Rich is on the floor for most of the game. You know, I think it'll vary a lot.
Stu, I know he's not on anyone's list, but while we have you here and we're talking UMass, how many guys is Preston Santos going to be expected to guard at a time? Because he might have to do, like, two for one duty for this to be a good defense.
Yeah. Yeah. Defense is a huge question mark. I think, like, I know I joked about St. Joe's, like, scoring so many points per game, and they were a bad team. I think our plan is to kind of be the good version of what they were, just outrace people, you know, like first team to 100 wins, because I feel like we can certainly improve throughout the year and find the right matchups or the best possible defensive matchups that we can, but I don't think we're ever going to be a plus defensive team in the league this year. So I think we just kind of have to own that and just rain from three and do what we can to get to 90, you know.
No, but nobody else has a gripe about any of the hot takes in the top 21.
I mean, my biggest gripe, I guess. So you mentioned, Tyler, some of your honorable mentions at the end that didn't even include James Bishop. So you really think that that low of him this
Oh, no,
year.
He was at – no, if we went out to 30, he's on there, but I just didn't want to mention him as an honorable mention.
Right, but
it's more like, entertaining if I just don't say his name in any positive light in this pod.
That's my biggest grievance on the whole thing, that you mentioned Tyson Acuff and not James Bishop as an honorable mention. That's unacceptable.
Hey, Duquesne is going to be better than Fordham. They have to have at least 2 seconds on this pod. And apparently Kevin Easley is supposed to be their star, even though he only scored 4.5 points a game last year.
Yeah, we got to pour one out for Duquesne and Fordham, but no players on any lists. Honestly, I didn't consider anybody from any of those teams, which is a shame because last year I think Duquesne, you could make a case for three of their players in the preseason when we did this. But Duquesne's, I think Acuff, he's got potential, but – to me, just hasn't shown enough yet. And their transfers, like Easley, as you mentioned, I think he was a former Rookie of the Year at his first school. He was somewhere else before TCU, I believe, but just a lot of unproven talent on that team.
Duquesne's one of those teams where, like, they could be decent, but not because of top 25 talent, but just they have, like, a lot of, like, top 60 guys, you know, like they're gonna rely on like different people stepping up each night.
Mm-hmm. They're gonna be really good on defense.
Yeah,
and they might be a dumpster fire on offense.
Yeah
I had Trey Williams as an honorable mention. He was all conference defender, Indiana State, and the Missouri Valley had a ton of quality big men, and Trey mm-hmm. Williams held his own, so he's gonna have to do the same thing on the defensive end in the A-10. My concern, not only with them in Fordham, it's hard to project certain transfers from succeeding when they either came from really bad teams and just put up a whole bunch of points on bad teams, or a whole bunch of guys who averaged 8 to 10 points at the previous spot. It's hard to project which ones. You know, we did that a bit for Deshaun Schwartz, but he was a proven contributor at Colorado, and we can make that projection that without McKinley Wright and him being the top guard for George Mason, he could star. We can't really do that for Duquesne or even Fordham, even though they have a pair of really good transfers in Antonio Day and Darius Quisenberry, who I think averaged over 17 points at the previous spots, but they were on really bad teams. So it's kind of hard to assume that they're going to do well and warrant a top 21 spot.
So before we wrap this up, I want to pose two questions to everybody here. First one, just real quick, one guy that you left off your list that you are terrified will make you look incredibly stupid come March. So maybe they haven't done enough to prove to you that they're going to be top 20. Maybe you end up being completely right and they're nowhere near the list, but next thing you know, we could blink and they could be second team all conference. Because for me, it's Jordan Nesbitt.
Yeah.
We all might get burned real bad not having him in this discussion.
Yeah, he could be like top 7 or top 8.
I have Francis Okoro from the same team. I think the front court is his. Oregon, the way Oregon works is that you either get 30 minutes up front or you just transfer out. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad player. And I think he's definitely going to take over French's spot. And he has the physical tools to be right up there with Ashuni and Golden when it comes to top impact big men. For Nesbitt, my concern is that when you don't get any playing time at your previous spot, I understand that you might not be a power conference guy, but there are some times where you just might not be warranted at your top 100 status, period. And he might end up just being an average role player. Now, I'm concerned on what kind of impact he'll have alongside Perkins and if he can someone that can do things without having the ball in his hands, because he's not going to get a ton of shots with Perkins and Rashad Williams in the offense.
I'm actually going to go with another Billiken for this answer, and I couldn't justify putting him on the list just because he didn't have anywhere near the stats, but I'm really big on Terrence Hargrove Jr. this year. Just so much athletic potential. I thought last year, honestly, Travis Ford should have used him more, but I think there's a little bit more room for playing time with Jordan Goodwin and Demarius Jacobs gone, so expecting some big things from him. And then one more pick too, which I'm not really sure what to expect, because another guy that didn't have tremendous stats, but I feel like we might be not giving enough attention that Bob McKillop's going to have a point guard from Michigan State that's a really good three-point shooter. And I think there's a chance that Foster Lawyer ends up being a sneaky, great point guard this year.
Yeah, my guy was he was mentioned already in the top 21, but Vince Williams, kind of the vocal and mental leader of VCU, the most seasoned good player that they have left. I don't know that he's ever going to go for like 35, and that's why I'm going to say, like, man, I should have had him. But I think he's going to be really good all the time. And I think even after the injuries to Ace and Jameer Watkins, I still think VCU is going to be a good team, because I think they just kind of have a next man up, like, plug and play style with that defense. So I think I might regret leaving off what could easily be the best player on that team.
He was the eighth guy that I wrote down on my whole list. He was definitely going to be on it. It was just a matter of what spot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Tristan, you got a fear of being burned guy?
Ooh, well, I mean, I put a lot of faith in Amazon at number five. So if that doesn't work out, I could potentially be burnt there. Him and Yuri Collins. If Yuri Collins averages number 5 points a game, then he had no business being in the top 21. So I'm kind of hoping for those two. But other than that, I feel fairly strong about the list in general. I'm just concerned about which Billiken is going to step up and be the second guy to pair of Perkins.
Yeah, I think I feel as strong as I could possibly feel, which might not be that strong, but, like, I don't know. I could have spent a week editing my list, and I'm not sure I would have felt any better. It's just too many variables, too many question marks.
Well, maybe if someone from Rhode Island breaks out as a star, then that would warrant top 20 consideration. But I don't think you can tell who's going to do that.
Yeah.
All right, so we will just close it out with this final question. One final takeaway that everyone has from making this list and looking at this list for the upcoming season. Could be something that you basically already knew, or something that you realized that maybe made you change your preseason expectations.
Yeah, I'll go first. I think it would be an absolute shocker if St. Bonaventure and Richmond don't finish 1-2. You know, I have all five stars with St. Bonaventure in the list. I have, I believe, at least three Richmond Spiders, and could have been four. There's a clear gap between the teams at the very top when it comes to potential questions, weaknesses, and strengths, and even the next tier. You know, there's questions about St. Louis, Dayton, especially VCU of injuries. So I think even though the Bonnies surprised Richmond in terms of preseason expectations, I think it should be very clear who the top two teams are just by making this list.
For me, it was just, I know we've talked about it, but the gap between five and six, just who are the stars in this league? Like, whose league is it going into the year? Like, I knew I would have to have guys like Javonte Perkins and Grant Golden and Oshun and all that, but I wasn't totally visualizing like the gap or the drop off that happened kind of after those seasoned guys that we've been talking about for years, and just how much possibilities there are for that second all conference team. Like, I had no idea going into the list that it would be possible for me to put Josh Oduro at six, but here we are.
I'd just say my biggest takeaway, and I know last year when we made these lists, we were only doing returning players, but honestly, I can't think of that many of last year's freshmen or transfers that I would have had. But I had three transfers and a freshman, and I just think with all the roster movement that took place, this is going to be such an unpredictable season. I mean, especially I have Kamara in the top 10, and this is someone that I've never even seen play for Dayton yet, but he just seems like someone that could have such a big impact. Same with Deshaun Schwartz coming from a really good program. Now he's at George Mason with a new coach. Like, how can we say what George Mason is going to do? Like you said earlier, Stu, they could finish anywhere between 4-11, and we have no idea. So I just think the fact that we all had so many newcomers to the league on our lists and that we had some pretty different picks from each other, it's going to be such an unpredictable season. And good luck to us for trying to figure it out over the next month or so, but it's tough this year.
Yeah, you basically hit mine, which is just – this is so much more unpredictable than last year. I think there's probably about 35 guys that you can see a legitimate path to being an all-conference player this year. So I'll change mine to, if I'm St. Bonaventure, Richmond, or St. Louis, I'm just on my knees so happy right now that I have an established star in this league because no one else does, and that is going to pay huge dividends for all three of them. And, you know, everybody knows Bonaventure and Richmond are going to be good. I think that's could potentially be the distinguishing factor for SLU over everybody else is because Perkins is just going to be better than the best guy on basically all of their other opponents' rosters.
Mm-hmm. Takeover mode.
So that does it for our incredible top 21 list debate. I think we clocked this in a whole half hour shorter than last year, despite adding a man to the panel. So, Stu and Tristan, thank you both for joining us. Where can people find both of your terrific works?
Hey, same place. I haven't been on as much because I had a baby girl born in July, so I'm still kind of finding my sea legs. But, yeah, Tristan is the king at Busting Brackets, and that's my usual publication site. So, yeah, Busting Brackets. Follow it on Twitter if you're not already.
Yes, please.
Tristan, where can everybody find your work, especially if they want to hear about the rest of college basketball and, for some reason, always about the Pitt Panthers?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at HoopsNut. 351. I'm going to plan on doing a lot of local coverage, not only just Pitt, but the Duquesne Dukes as well. Hopefully get to see some games in person. We're a national blog at Busting Brackets, so not just the A-10, but anything you want to hear for the upcoming season, we're planning on having it covered, and just so happy that we're just a month away from opening tip. Feels like forever, and we're getting close to normal, and for all ways, and can't wait to see the coverage from not only Stu but everyone else, you guys as well, at 3-Bit League. It's just a fun time.
Yep, and since it keeps going around, I'll go ahead and plug my article on Busting Brackets, the five biggest questions for the A-10. Go ahead and read that if you haven't. Go read the great works that Tristan's putting out. Go read Stu, and if you happen to be the right client, I think Matt might have an audit report coming out of somebody sometime soon.
Yeah, so that's about it. I tweet occasionally, but no, nothing too intelligent, so don't worry about that.
Well, thank you guys for joining us, and thank you all for listening to this marathon ranking. That does it for another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed it, give us 5 stars on iTunes. If you enjoyed it, but maybe not quite as much as you'd hope to, give us 4 stars. I would say if you hated it, give us 1, but we know you didn't hate it. So be sure to leave us a comment on there too. If there's something we can be doing better, send us a message on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod or our email 3BidLeague@gmail.com. And everybody stay safe out there. Enjoy this final month before the start of college basketball.